your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to another episode of Alchemy. Today I'm joined with Sy Scott, co-founder and CEO of Headset. Many of us in the cannabis space know Headset as the leading analytics player designed to help operators make informed decisions based on data. Sy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Yeah. So, Sy, you know, quick background on you. You know, you first entered into the cannabis industry as the co-founder of Leafly and, you know, did a great job over there, grew the platform to serve over 6 million monthly visitors, and then later sold it to Privateer Holdings. So congrats on that. You know, after Leafly, you co-founded and became the CEO of Headset. So I think, you know, just a great way to start the show. Would love to hear a little bit more about how you really conceptualize, you know, Headset.
Yeah, certainly. So with Leafly to start, you know, we really wanted to kind of demystify cannabis. And back in 2010, that was the big problem, the big challenge, I think. You saw this emergence of dispensaries happening, and a lot of people didn't really understand, you know, what went on behind those closed doors. You had to have a doctor's recommendation. It was very different than like the adult use world that we're in now in many markets. And so, you know, we feel like we solved that problem. We ended up selling to Privateer Holdings, as you mentioned, you know, sometime after. And then we stuck around with those guys for about 3 years and really saw other opportunities. You know, myself and my co-founders are very much entrepreneurs, as many people in this space are, and really wanted to stay in cannabis. We saw, you know, that there's still plenty of opportunity ahead. And really, it was a couple factors that drove kind of the decision to pursue something like Headset. You know, one was this idea that, you know, as cannabis as an industry matures, you know, you're just going to need market intelligence type data, like any vertical that's out there, like consumer packaged goods, you know, alcohol, you name it. All these organizations leverage data to make informed decisions. And that was just kind of beginning with cannabis. And another factor was there was this kind of emergence of brands that was starting to happen. In the early days of Leafly, there were no real brands. It was really, you know, branded flower in the sense of strains, you know, if you can think of them sort of like brands. But there was a shift to more like packaged goods, growth of things like edibles. And these brands were really looking for, you know, how do they differentiate? Where do they invest their dollars? Where should they go in the space? And they came to us at Leafly, you know, kind of saying, well, you guys are a tech platform. You should, you know, hopefully know, you know, what does the vape pen market look like? And we really didn't, you know, we knew kind of search behavior, and we knew that there was some interest there, but we really didn't have a good understanding of, you know, how things really sold. So we wanted to go out and solve that problem. That was really the start of what became Headset.
Awesome. So, you know, you guys obviously have a super, super focus on market intelligence. I think when we're talking about the cannabis vertical, and while this industry has been around, it's really, as you know, the last couple of years where things have really started to heat up. So I'm just curious if you can maybe give us a little bit of insight into, you know, why intelligence is so important for the space.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of it has to do with the maturity of the space, you know, further investment coming to the cannabis industry. You're seeing organizations like these multi-state operators that are venture backed. You're seeing LPs in Canada, publicly traded. And with this maturity comes the need for market data. And really, the use of market data is to help inform decisions around things like opportunity, really understand the competitive landscape, you know, where gaps might exist, you know, what your competitors are up to. And then if you're in the market, really understanding kind of your brand positioning. So those are kind of the common use cases for market intelligence. And with the sophistication, with kind of investment, with the level of competition that's starting to happen, you know, shelf space is limited at retail. And it used to be you could produce a product, you could get it on the store shelves and you could sell it. And now there's, you know, thousands of brands, hundreds of thousands of products or SKUs, you know, across all the markets that we track. And so it's getting more competitive. And to really understand, you know, what that landscape looks like and how to position your product, you do need to leverage market intelligence. And so with Headset, what we tried to do was basically glean sales data and sales trends. So we do that by working with retail partners, retail cooperators, connecting directly to their point of sale and using that information in aggregate to paint a picture of really what's going on in the space for our clients.
That's awesome. So, you know, we've had quite a few guests on the show the last couple of weeks in this spring period of, you know, COVID-19, if you will. And there's been a ton of just really interesting viewpoints from different folks, whether they're, you know, have just products around dispensaries or they're a large MSO. But the one thing that was really, you know, very clear was that many of them have been experiencing very large spikes ever since, you know, the shelter in place orders went in place. Things started to stabilize recently, but there's definitely been a very large impact on the coronavirus in the cannabis space. I'm just curious if there's any insight as far as, you know, you guys have been able to see on the data side of what's been happening in the marketplace.
Yeah, certainly. It's truly, you know, unprecedented times. Just as, you know, we're starting to see, you know, patterns emerging in sales trends as markets begin to mature. You know, you're looking at markets like Washington and Colorado that have been around for numbers of years, and even markets like California now, multi-year with adult use. You saw a nice pattern, as you can imagine, you know, sales spike on Friday and Saturday as people go to purchase, you know, cannabis on the for the weekends and during the weekends, and more sales during the week happening in the evening. And so on. And all of that's just been flipped upside down. You know, a lot of the markets that we work in are adult use. We have a footprint in medical, but as far as tracking from a market data perspective, is primarily adult use. And the way that we get the data through the point of sale enables us to see all this stuff as it happens. So, you know, while we're having this conversation, things are selling and Headset's making sense of that data and getting it to our clients. So we can see the impact of COVID-19. You know, day to day. And really, it was it's kind of an interesting narrative. So, you know, in the beginning of March, middle of March, like March, the week of March 16th, we really saw some consumer stockpiling behavior start to happen, right. Large baskets. So people, you know, were kind of starting to hoard. They didn't know if there was going to be a shelter in place, if retailers were going to be classified as essential services. And I think that was something that was, you know, quite frightening for a lot in the industry, a lot of organizations like ours that work in the space. But the good news is, you know, for the most part, the essential services has been the case for these retailers, with the exception of some markets like Massachusetts, where the stores are still closed, unfortunately. But one interesting thing with, you know, the adult use markets like Colorado, California, that have had medicinal, even Washington State, you see a lot of medicinal consumers that have switched to adult use just for ease of access. You don't have to get your doctor's recommendation. You still get a great assortment. So it's still important to keep the adult use stores open, even for medical patients. And unfortunately, you know, Massachusetts has closed them, but that's pretty much the exception. We did see a little bit of that happen in Ontario, Canada, but they've since opened it back up. But you saw that kind of inventory hoarding, you saw inventory levels at retailers going down because of this kind of panic buying. And then in markets like Nevada that are like primarily tourism driven, as you can imagine, like Las Vegas is very quiet right now. So in markets like that, sales are actually down quite significantly. But then in other markets like Washington, Oregon, Colorado, actually sales are up in aggregate. And so it's, you know, people are still purchasing cannabis, which I think is a good signal for what's ahead. Like once we're out of the shelter in place and once we're into this kind of the rest of the year, you know, we could be facing some form of recession. And, you know, we all hope that, you know, the cannabis industry is relatively recession proof. And some signals are kind of pointing to that already.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, with you guys in particular, when it comes to, you know, insights around data, like you guys are really specializing in understanding, you know, getting folks ahead of the curve when it comes to the trending and innovation that we see out there. And, you know, just kind of piggybacking on what you were just saying, kind of post coronavirus, post shelter in place, like anything or any insight that you might be seeing in the next, say, 3 months out to even 5 years, as far as what's going to be shaping the cannabis space. It could be around regulation. It could be about, you know, purchasing and buying power, or just kind of overall changes in the industry.
Yeah, I think we're most likely going to see a lot of changes. Certainly consumer purchase behavior changes. I think you're going to see that across all sorts of retail, but especially cannabis. Like just, you know, anecdotally, like grocery shopping, you know, like you know, my family, now we do most of our grocery shopping through services like Instacart. Mm-hmm. With that delivery. And you're starting to see that happening in markets, in cannabis markets, where delivery wasn't allowed, and then is opening up more. California has always had, you know, some form of delivery, but markets like Nevada, it's been a little bit more limited. That's been opened up. So I think you're going to continue to see more of that trend happening. And then the pre-order pickup or the click and collect, that also is going to have a quite a significant impact on consumer purchasing. It's we see in the data already, you know, when someone is on their laptop, you know, shopping on a store or retailer's website and adding things to their cart, we do notice that the baskets, so the transaction is much larger, you know, 40-50% larger depending on market. And the product assortment's quite different as well. You know, we see things like pre-roll sales actually down quite a bit. You know, it could be because, you know, with COVID being, you know, something that's respiratory, people not wanting mm-hmm. to potentially smoke as much. We see things like edible sales up quite significantly. And that may be lasting consumer behavior. You know, maybe as people try different forms of cannabis, they may gravitate towards that after all this is over. So, you know, different basket sizes, different product assortment. You're going to see certainly pricing impact. We're starting to see some value price brands coming to market, people positioning like historically kind of premium brands that are introducing value priced lines to their product portfolio. And I think that is kind of pointing to maybe some future recession. You know, when you look at alcohol as a parallel, alcohol sales in 08-09 actually did pretty well, but it was primarily the value priced alcohol that sold really well, just because that purchasing power was a bit less for people as they struggled through a recession. So you're going to see more of that. So it's quite interesting, and it's really like, you know, what we love doing, you know, like our mission is to really help these operators be successful so that this industry is successful. And we do that by giving them the data they need. And, just on a personal level, you know, the cannabis industry has always been exciting because it's one of just rapid growth and change and, just kind of on its own, right? With new states coming online, new markets opening up and so on. But this, you know, as unfortunate as it is, it's also kind of neat to see just like consumer behavior changes and how that impacts. And from our seat at Headset, just being able to kind of monitor this just kind of keeps me going every day.
Yeah. I mean, I think you guys probably are seeing so many changes, you know, right now. And I don't remember where I read it the other day, but, you know, I think you just mentioned about, you know, pre-rolls and whatnot kind of, you know, taking a backseat to the edibles market because of obviously, you know, respiratory issues. But one thing that I did read too, which I thought was very, very interesting data point, was that a lot of folks are also moving to more ingestibles like gummies and whatnot because their family is home and the kids are home. And so they don't have the free time that they once might have had when the kids were in school. And so they're focusing on, you know, different, you know, use cases around consumption, right? Which is changing their behavior too, which is kind of interesting. You know, I think another thing that, you know, I think is super interesting right now is, will that change in behavior be a long-term effect once we get out of this, or will people start resuming back to how they were purchasing before, right?
Right.
And who knows yet? But still, I think for you guys, just really looking at all these patterns and trending information is pretty neat. I wanted to ask you just from an expert in the data space too, there's been a lot of folks that have brought this up too, as far as brands. So consumers haven't really fully accepted and are not loyal to a lot of these brands where they're trying different products. And do you kind of think about that as, is it because it's too early or people just haven't built that loyalty in yet?
Yeah, I think it's a couple things that really kind of have limited some of the brand loyalty. Certainly, you know, brand loyalty does exist out there, but I don't think it's at the scale of other kind of fast moving consumer goods type of brands, brand loyalty that we see, you know, like people buying a certain type of detergent or toilet paper and staying consistent. Even alcohol, you know, people have their favorite bourbons and what have you. But it's going to get there certainly. But I think it's a couple factors. You know, one is really just kind of access and consistency of these brands. You know, in a market like California, that's pretty sizable geography. You know, sometimes you have a brand that might be available in the Bay Area, but not available in Southern California. And some of that kind of access to specific brands. So if you have a friend who lives in California that says, you know, you have to try this brand, it may be hard to find, just kind of getting access to that specific product that they're recommending. Or, you know, consistency of access. Sometimes brands come and go. And a lot of that has to do with just kind of experimentation on behalf of the license holders as they're trying different brands and cycling things in and out. Particularly with like products, any strain-based products, we see a lot of the reason why there's so many SKUs that we track at Headset is it's so much strain-derived. And these brands are trying different strains. And so you start to see loyalty to maybe a certain strain, and then all of a sudden that strain is no longer available. And maybe another brand carries that same strain. You might just jump over to that brand to get access to that strain. And that's, you know, in particular for things like flower and pre-roll. Anything that's kind of inhalable, less so than for edibles. You know, edibles are kind of much more consistent on a SKU level, but access can still be tough. So I think that's one challenge, just kind of that consistency and that ease of access to these brands. The brands that we see kind of leading sales through Headset really are the ones that seem to have the largest footprint. So largest retailer adoption footprint in any market. They're in the most shops in Colorado. They're in the most stores in California and so on. And that really is driving a volume. And as far, retention, a little harder to know. But I think, you know, you have to start there, right? If someone likes to drink Coca-Cola, you can go anywhere and drink Coca-Cola. And that really helps with that loyalty. If I went to a restaurant and they don't have Coca-Cola, I went to a football game, they don't, you know, it makes it harder to be loyal. You might try other brands and gravitate towards those other sodas. So I think that's one big component of it. Another component of it is the lack of marketing or challenges around marketing. And so much of a brand and like the way people gravitate towards brands is really like how they see themselves in those products. Like, this brand speaks to me, right? I only wear Patagonia because I have, you know, this kind of outlook on sustainability and, you know, balance in life or whatever, you know, Patagonia is marketing towards. You know, you get that a lot through marketing efforts, and marketing is pretty challenging in this space, as you well know, Vilo. And I think for lack of that large scale marketing, it's really hard to build kind of that brand perception. You know, if I go to a cannabis retailer and I'm looking at all these products and they have great packaging, you know, how do I know that this brand versus that brand really speaks to me as a consumer? And often that's driven through marketing. And just given the limited marketing channels, I think it makes it harder for these organizations. And there's a lot of creative ways you can do it. And they're doing that. You know, they'll do in-store demos. You know, well, they'll have brand representatives at a store, you know, talking about their brand and positioning. But if you don't happen to be shopping at that time, you might miss it. You know, channels where you can advertise your brands are less available. You know, it's really hard to advertise on platforms like Facebook and Google, like your new brand in cannabis. So I think those are the two primary factors, but I don't think it's going to be forever. I think you're going to continue to see more brand loyalty. You're going to continue to see more channels for marketing and more access to these brands. And I think long term, you're going to see a lot of the same patterns you see in other verticals, other consumer packaged goods types industries.
Yeah, makes sense. Do you anticipate any major pricing changes in the cannabis market? I know we were talking a little while ago as far as some of the larger brands out there have come out with secondary products that are a little cheaper. Do you think there's going to be a bigger movement around that?
Yeah, I think pricing, you know, as one of the four P's of marketing, you know, as the old adage, I think is always going to be something that's evaluated. With the four P's, it's like price, promotion, place, and product, right? And so, you know, assuming you have like your product and you have it in stores and in your place, you know, I think pricing and promotion are kind of a couple of similar things. A lot of promotions are driven by pricing, by price discounts and so on. So, yeah, certainly I think pricing is not solidified. You know, you see price pressure in markets like Canada. You know, Canada legalized federally, so nationwide legal cannabis. And really the reason, one of the big drivers was to remove the black market, you know, and that's a big reason why we legalize, you know, state to state here in the U.S. And the black market does have some pricing pressure to the legal market, right? When you have a legal market and you have, you know, potentially high taxation, you have a lot of requirements on production that just add costs that the black market might not have. Maybe it's cheaper for the black market to grow and to sell. And so that will always be a bit of a driver for price pressure. So you're going to continue to see kind of pricing go down to just get rid of the black market. Some of that is, maybe lowered tax rates, helping with some costs and expenses. But I think without that, you'd have this imbalance. And I remember in the early days of legalization, it was this fine line, like you don't want to charge too much. Where the black market just wins, and you don't want to charge too little, where it's just so readily available and cannabis is almost free. Not that you could get to that, but the price per pound, say for flower, gets so low that it's just so accessible. And that was always a big challenge. So it's finding that sweet spot while competing as a black market. So that's going to be one factor, certainly. Another is organizations are always just going to be evaluating price. Like we recently did kind of a custom study for one of our clients. On their pricing. And so really they were looking at, can we raise prices? They're already probably one of the lowest priced brands and they're a leader in their category. And they wanted to see, can we raise our prices, on average by about a dollar? Would that impact our market share? So we did a great analysis and it turns out that they can do that and still maintain their market share and still be, well positioned in the marketplace. So you're going to constantly see that as people look to new ways to drive additional revenue, incremental revenue. Pricing is one of those levers. And then to that earlier point about COVID and value priced and discounted price products, I think that you are going to see more and more of that. I hope it's not this big race to the bottom for everybody. I hope that there's going to be room like in any space for, the cheaper brands, the kind of standard price and then the premium price brands. I think we'll always see that stratification. But I do think you're going to see more and more until the brands can really, especially the premium brands, can build that brand equity, that brand loyalty, and command that premium price point. You're going to see, uninformed consumers that, for lack of trying, but it's just not a lot of good information. You go to a store and you're presented with so many new SKUs and so many new brands. You might gravitate towards, you're looking at two Blue Dream vapor cartridges, maybe one's $10 cheaper. You might go for that. Right. And I think that kind of pressure, that consumer pressure does exist today and continues to push the price down. So, yeah, pricing is by no means like set in stone. But I do think that you're going to see not only the brands, like how they position pricing, but the retailers themselves as well. Like how are they priced to stay competitive? The last thing I'll say on pricing, I can go on and on with this stuff. But the last thing is really like the retailer. If we think about this shift in consumer behavior that's happening. I think a lot of there's going to be a lot of transfer of value to the aggregators shortly here, if it's not already happening, where you're seeing organizations like Leafly, for example, and others like Leafly, where you can go and look and see, a long list of retailers. If you're looking for a specific brand or specific product, you're presented with maybe five retailers that carry the Blue Dream strain you're looking for, and you can quickly price compare. And if you have delivery, and you don't have to leave your house, it's pretty easy to just kind of pick one that has the lower price. So you're going to see more of that happening. If you're not delivery and you have to go to the store, that's good for the locations in a lot of ways because they can build that relationship with the consumer. But if it's strictly delivery, you have this intermediation happening. And as a consumer, you might just go lower price. You can think about like a DoorDash or an Uber Eats analogy where if I wanted to order Chinese food and maybe I wanted to order chow mein and I see five restaurants and they're all rated, 4 stars and they all have chow mein, maybe I'll get the one that's a little cheaper than the others, So I think that kind of pricing impact will continue to occur and you'll see that reflected just in the market.
Yeah, good insight there. Lots of insight for that matter. I just have one quick question for you, just kind of being in the space and, being exposed to so many brands out there. There's been, I would say in the last 2 weeks, tremendous chatter for consumers and even from the legislative side, just so many people talking about, the impact that coronavirus has had on a lot of states from an economic perspective. And, I'm in New York and I think a lot of folks in New York are like, hey, there should be recreational cannabis that should be legal now. And we should, start using those taxes to kind of close the gap and line the coffers. So I'm just curious, from an opinion perspective, if you've been hearing some of the chatter that I have, And I think it makes a lot of sense, but it could be a potential way that something, you know, this terrible, like the coronavirus, actually speeds up certain states from a legislation perspective.
Yeah, I did. I've heard the same thing. And I do think that is going to very much be the case. I think we're going to, the latest narrative that I'm starting to see emerge from COVID is around states and this idea of bankruptcy with states, which apparently I'm not that familiar on how that all works, but I don't think that that's a possibility. But states like New Jersey, New York saying, you know, we're going to have a significant shortfall here from taxation, and we're not going to be able to pay our firefighters and our police officers and so on. And I think a lot of markets are going to feel that pressure and realize that, you know, this is something that if they were thinking about, like New Jersey, New York, you know, a lot of states on the East Coast have been thinking about, I think it will, we'll see some acceleration around legalization efforts because it is a great tax center. We've seen, you know, in the West Coast where a lot of this started, you know, Colorado and Washington, you know, the sky doesn't fall. You know, you don't see, you know, youth consumption going up. All the things that I think a lot of people are afraid of with legalization really haven't come to fruition. And instead, you know, building jobs, you know, driving tax revenue, and those things are going to be important as we move into this post-COVID world. And I think see some of the derivative impact of what this shutdown has caused for the economy. So certainly you're going to see more acceleration on the markets that have already signaled that they want to legalize. I think it will also encourage markets that maybe hadn't had plans. I know, you know, New Jersey, New York, pretty far along in the process, certainly, but other markets that might have been further out, you'll probably see some more chatter happening. I think there was a headline recently about New Mexico's governor saying that...
I saw that. And Mexico today.
Exactly. And with the election happening this year, whichever way it goes, you know, hopefully, you know, this is election years seem to help with the chatter around, you know, cannabis legalization, just as a subject that a lot of voters are interested in. And so hopefully, you know, that drives more of the conversation and we do see acceleration. I mean, it's my time in this space been about 10 years since we started Leafly. And honestly, it's moved quite quick. It's a lot faster than probably I would have thought 10 years ago. But at the same time, when we're in the middle of it, like you and I are, sometimes we want it to move a little faster. And I think that this would be the case.
Well, really good insight. And Sai, if you've listened to the show before, you know, we talk about business in the beginning, and then we just kind of end the show with some quick fire questions about you. You ready?
Ready.
All right. How would you describe the color yellow to someone who's blind?
Bright, I suppose, but that's a tough thing.
That's maybe, well, they have other senses.
True. They have other senses. I guess warm.
Warm is exactly the right answer. Although there are no right or wrong answers with these. How long could you hold your breath for underwater?
Oh man, maybe a minute. I used to swim quite a bit, when I lived in Southern California, but I've been in Seattle for 6 years and, I don't swim nearly as much, so maybe a minute if I'm lucky.
That's pretty good. Are dogs people?
They sure act like people sometimes, but they're certainly animals.
Yeah, my dog, I think, is definitely human. have you ever been to Africa?
You know, I have not been to Africa. That's one continent that I think I have not been to.
I haven't been either. Maybe we need to do a double trip. Would you eat a day old taquito from 7-Eleven?
You know, I'd like to think that I'm better than that, but I could see a situation that may happen.
You had a slight pause there on answering that question.
It may have happened in the past. I don't know about 7-Eleven specifically, but similar situations.
What's the most number of hours that you've watched TV in a single day?
You know, not that much, maybe six.
Okay.
Which is, I mean, it's a fair amount, but
I don't watch a lot of TV myself, but I find that when I do, if it's a Sunday and it's bad weather and I'm binging,
right,
I could literally be there for 10 hours and not have any idea that 10 hours went by.
Yeah. I recently went through that with Better Call Saul. And I think, you know, maybe four. I did about four episodes recently. But, you know, I chalk it up to COVID, shelter in place.
Exactly. I never feel very good about myself after watching TV for that long. Okay, so last question. If there's a spider in your house, do you kill it or do you bring it outside and let it free?
It depends on the size. I think if it's, you know, quite large, I'll try and set it free just because I don't like the idea of crushing something that large. But I've got a couple daughters, and they're all for me, you know, killing them when they start screaming. And
right, exactly. Well, this was awesome, Cy. And I think we definitely know who to go to when it comes to data and trends. So really appreciate, you know, all the insight. And, you know, you guys have a lot to analyze these days. And it's been great to, you know, hear some of these great, you know, trends from you, and appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeff. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Awesome. This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.